Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Nation Building Movement and Dots for ESJ. Today, we're going to be talking about own or be own and the political aspect of that. And is it political or is it your God-given right to own where you live, to have some ownership in this world and this infrastructures that run this world? Brother Gene is going to give us an education today on ownership and how to own or make the decision to be owned. And nobody wants to be owned. But as he said earlier today, slavery is not over. And so how do we come out of our condition? How do we come out of her, which is America, and the systems that have nearly destroyed many people? It doesn't matter race, creed, color, kind. This economic system has not served us well. And so today, I want to do two things before we start. I want to wish my oldest son, Trey the Truth, on Facebook a happy 41st birthday. I think it's 41st. And I also want to pay homage to Brother Gerald Levert, It's been 10 years, I think, since he's been gone. And he was on that collaboration, and I know you heard his voice. But Gerald was a humanitarian. Y'all probably didn't know that part of Gerald, but Gerald was a freedom fighter. Gerald was very involved in his community through his temple, the Kingdom Hall. Even, you know, it doesn't matter what religion he was in, but he was really about his people. And so I definitely wanted to pay homage to him, that he's been gone away from us so long, but he's still in our hearts. Okay. Now, I got that out the way. And I'm just excited today because I know what Brother Gene is bringing to us today is going to be for our benefit. So, people, listen up. Get your pens. Get your paper. Take notes. Get this information. The first set of information I want to offer you is this. We have a Facebook page called Descendants of American Slaves for Economic and Social Justice. Go to our page, Brother Gene, Brother Vernon, some other people are going to be putting some information in there for us. And also the second thing is, it seems that I forgot. Oh, I want to go to direct you to our web, DOS4ESJ.org. D is in David, A is in Apple, S is in Sam, the number 4. E is in Ego, S is in Sam, J is in Justice.org. DOS4ESJ.org. Look at our website and get that information. All right, let's get started. Brother Gene, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Sister Queen. How are you? I'm doing okay. Can you hear me?
I'm blessed. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm blessed. Thank you.
I first want to say this to the listening audience. You know, we have these shows once a week, and the purpose of these shows is not to, you know, come with a lot of rhetoric. We're introducing something, a new paradigm. I know it may sound strange to many of you, but we have to start thinking outside the box, and we have to come with a whole new paradigm, because it's quite evident that the old paradigm is not working. But, you know, the question is, would you rather own or be owned? That's the question, own or be owned. You know, whether it's wiser to choose the fragile safety of job and paycheck to be a tool of tools, let go at an hour unknown, owned by one or some, and then rendered obsolete. You know, Queen said some, you know, rather is it our right to own? Yeah, it is a fundamental human right to own.
Come on.
It's a fundamental human right, you know, to own. You know, Article 17 of the Declaration of Human Rights that was written, I think, in 1956. Article 17 of the Declaration of Human Rights of the UN says everyone has a right to own property by themselves and in association with others. That's a human right, but no nation on the earth. Now, China did not participate in that because we know China is a communist country, but all other nations agreed to that, but nobody is utilizing that fundamental human right. It says everybody has a right to own property. Now, that doesn't mean everybody has a right to own a car. Everybody has a right to own trinkets and objects. No, that's not what they're saying. Because those who wrote the Declaration of Human Rights, they understand what is property. Property is powers over what the thing produces. See, they understand that. So that does not mean that everyone has a right to own a car, own a, you know, trinkets and objects. It said everybody has a right. And yes, that's a fundamental human right. Now, when we look at it from a political perspective, we can go all the way back in history. I think it was in 1933, after post-slavery and after the Great Depression. FDR, what he did was they addressed the effect of poverty and not the cause of poverty. After, you know, the Great Depression, you know, people needed housing. They couldn't afford housing, so they gave them affordable housing. People couldn't afford to feed their children, so they gave them aid and food stamps, you know. Women with dependent children. Women with dependent children were able to get subsidized housing and so forth. See, what they did was they addressed the effect of poverty and they addressed the need, but they didn't address the cause of poverty. And then in 1946, they came up with the Full Employment Act of 1946, where they wanted full employment. They wanted everybody working. And government went on to create over 11 million jobs that didn't make any sense at all, because they wanted full employment. He said he wanted the manufacturing companies up and pumping out production, wanted everyone, you know, working. But like I say, the government went so far as to creating 11 million jobs. They had people going out wiping down statues at monuments and cleaning up national parks and things like that. But there's one factor that they didn't consider. Rather, they did not know it, and they were just pretty much attacking the need at that time, but they didn't look in the crystal ball. They didn't look 100 years later, because there's two factors of production. There's human labor and capital input, human input and capital input. So what FDR and them did, they focused on the human input, which is working, everybody working. They wanted full employment, but they didn't look at the other input of production, which is capital. So 100 years later, up until now, if you look at the Democrats and the Republicans, they do it also. They do it in more of a conservative way, but if you look at what the spending is amongst the Democratic Party today, is they're doing the same thing that they did 100 years ago. Remember I said affordable housing for independent women with children, food stamps, you know, everybody, you know, they couldn't afford to send their children off to school, pay for schooling, so they created the public school system and things like that. So 100 years later, we have government doing the exact thing that they did over 100 years ago. And it's not working. And you wonder why inflation is on the rise, because government is doing the same thing, expecting a different result. And when you do that, that's just a meaning of insanity. But how it affected us as a people, as black people in particular, we have become dependent upon that today. We have become dependent upon government to solve our problems. And we have to really become to understand what is socialism. Socialism is government control, when you're owned by the state. And a lot of the subsidies, the welfare subsidies and things that we have become dependent upon government is socialism. And you don't want socialism, nor do we want capitalism. We have to become owners and understand the ownership power. You know, like I say, 100 years ago, they addressed the effects of poverty and not the need. And what has happened is we have become dependent upon that. And up until today, we still remain in the same situation. They, you know, when they pumped out all the stimulus money, you know, $6 trillion, $10 trillion, $12 trillion in stimulus money, they addressed the effect of, quote unquote, a pandemic. People were getting food stamps, $2,000 and $3,000 worth of food stamps. And, you know, that is the same thing they did over 100 years ago. So what that's basically called is socialism. And listening artists and black people, you don't want socialism. Saying socialism is just another form of communism. And socialism is that you're giving control and power to the state over your lives. And that's the direction that we're going. Now, would you rather own or be owned? And that's the political aspect of it. You know, we have become dependent upon government, and we got to get out of that. And the question is, would you rather own or be owned? You know, we're modern-day slaves today. As Queen was saying, slavery did not end in 1865, black man and woman. It's just evolved. If you go into it just evolved. They found more innovative ways to do it. I mean, when we say, you know, slavery, we're talking about welfare slaves, wage slaves, consumer debt slaves. All that is a form of slavery. And it is written in the scriptures of the Bible, you know, when a man is always, you know, indebted to his debtor, he is a slave. You know, I'm just paraphrasing. We are become modern day slaves. What we're doing today is pretty much sharecropping. And those who are on, I think it's in Amendment 13 of the Constitution, says the only way to get a man into servitude and slavery by imprisonment. Well, that's just a way to keep it going. You know, there are black people still picking cotton in the South. You know, it still exists. And what we're doing today for those who are working, we go to work, you know, it's just modern day slave because you can't seem to get ahead. So the question is, would you rather own or be owned? And later on in this segment, I'll be talking and sharing with you a way that you can become owners of real producing capital. So, Queen, I'm going to pause there in case there is any questions or comments.
Okay, I want to remind the listening audience that if you have a question, please press 1 on your dial pad, and we will take your question. I want to talk to Brother Vernon for a minute because Brother Vernon is involved a lot in the aspects of money and the ever-changing systems of money. And he shared something interesting with me today about how countries are really are changing the form of currency and how it will actually affect us. And this is all a part of, do you want to own or be owned? Because it's not just about ownership. I own this building. I own this plow. I own this mule. I own this land. But we need to take ownership in the infrastructure that runs America. They make decisions that affect us without us. We have no say-so. We don't take our freedoms, our civil liberties, as they call them, for granted and stand up and say, I don't want this railroad. I don't want this bridge. I don't want this apartment loft building that you're knocking out, you know, 30 homes to build, and you're taking away legacy and community and the pride of ownership from other people. We don't believe that we have a say, but that is also a part of your ownership, is to be able and to stand up and make decisions about community development in the community in which you live. But it's hard to do when you are a tenant and your landlord is not standing up or saying anything or is agreeing with the powers that be. And there you are. You're left to suffer and move out of a community where maybe you grew up. And maybe you wanted your children to grow up and experience some of the same things that you experienced. And it's a pride thing for us. I wanted my children to graduate from Jack Yates High School of Communications, where we were taught to do exactly what I'm doing today. And that is hosting and interviewing and camera work and communications and technology. And they did. And the sad thing about it is that my younger grandchildren may not have that privilege of carrying on and going to my alma mater or going to their grandfather's alma mater, University of Houston, because of gentrification. And that is because there were few owners that looked like us in those communities, but it's affecting us. So, Brother Vernon, talk to us about money and how currency is changing because of the decline of the dollar in the United States.
Wow. Thank you for painting that picture the way that you did. That really opened my eyes wide, seriously, the way that you described that. Last week, or it might have been the week before when I was on, I remember suggesting a documentary or a YouTube series that was done by Mr. Mike Maloney. The series is called The Hidden Secrets of Money. And it's interesting. You know, it's good just to get the history of currencies and of money throughout the civilizations down the line of time through the ages. I think he goes back a few thousand years to the first civilization that, you know, decided, okay, we're going to use this as money. I think it was some coral shells or something like that. But he goes from there all the way up to the current day and time. He includes cryptocurrency, and he includes commentary about Secretary of the Treasury Janet Yellen and former Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke, you know. So he's real comprehensive in terms of all the players and what the script is, because he connects the dots and you can see the pieces from one phase to another phase. And the thing that is very interesting, and we really should pay attention to nowadays, is the fact that every government where there is a central bank, there might be a few that haven't gotten on board yet, but this is pretty much going worldwide. Every central bank is now minting their own country's form of a digital currency. Let me correct that. A cryptocurrency, the government's own form of cryptocurrency. And I say that to make a distinction because in my online banking system, we're pretty much dealing with digital currency anyway. We're already dealing with a digital currency. But the interesting thing that this documentary, this series on YouTube, Hidden Secrets of Money, highlights is if you go through the history, I can't remember if he said there would have been over 600 fiat currencies in different countries and different times around the world, but they all end with hyperinflation and then total devaluation of the money. The dollar for that country, eventually, all of them, at least 630 that he counted before he got tired and had to go get some dinner, 630-something all end worthless. So we really don't have any reason to believe that the U.S. dollar is going to do anything different, because the exact same conditions of all these 630 different civilizations and their fiat currency system have all ended the same way. So we're at a time where all these central banks around the world are getting ready to implement a whole new system of how money works, how money operates, who has access, that's a key word that we use here a lot, who has access, ownership, and control of the new monetary system. So I think that that's something we need to be aware of, start paying attention to, and figure out how we can navigate in that space, because a lot of people are going to get blindsided, and that's the position we don't want to be in.
Yvonne, I want to say this, you know. Go ahead, Queen. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I just wanted to say this about what he just said. Do you see what he was talking about? How governments go in, make changes to currency, which is detrimental to how we live, whether we paying rent or whether we paying a mortgage or whether we paying utilities or whether we buying food or gas or whether we feed our children that day. This is the power that people have over us. I don't recall, Brother Vernon, anybody sending me a letter, knocking on my door, giving me a phone call about whether or not I was interested in the possibility of how I am being able to access my money. I can't say dollars, but I'm just saying, imagine being in a country where you don't make that decision. That is because we are not involved, and this is why I say own or be owned and the political aspect, it's because we're not involved in those decisions. We are not at the table, and the people who are supposed to represent us don't represent us well. It just seems like they go along with everything, and we are impacted by anything and everything, and then nobody seems to have no explanation or nothing to say. But when you own something, they have to come talk to you. That's the difference. Go ahead, Brother Gene.
Yeah, Vernon mentions something. He said, we have to take a look at it before, we might get blindsided. I just want to add, we have already been blindsided. We have become so distracted. And we're walking upright, but we're fast asleep. We're fast asleep, black man and woman. Because as Queen just said, there are things that are taking place, but we are so locked out of what's really going on as if we don't have any power to force governments to make decisions that are good for us. We have just become powerless. We just given all the state and the politicians, we've given them all the authority. Voluntarily, we've given them the authority to make decisions and impact policies that's going to, really have a big effect on your grandchildren's lives. Now, when you talk about cryptocurrency, and the central banking system, I think I've read where there's, 9 or 12 countries who's looking at a new currency. What they're looking at, the reason they're looking at a new currency is because they've come to realize that the American dollar is not worth anything. So they don't want to continue to take the American dollar, the fiat currency in trade and commerce. So cryptocurrency is a good way of monitoring transactions when it comes to, financial transactions, because as they come to realize that the system is broken, that the money system, the monetary policy has to be changed. And let me say this, that the Federal Reserve, the United States did away with the Federal Reserve and central banking system, 7 times in the history of America. They did away with it 7 times. And back in 1913, the way they went about, you know, getting it back into place, it was very, very tricky and undermining in the way they did it. But, you know, the Federal Reserve, you know, has the powers that I don't think many of the, you know, people who work within the Federal Reserve system, they have a power that many of them don't even know about. And I was fortunate enough, and we're fortunate enough at DOSESJ to be able to be introduced and recognize the powers that they have. But with changing the currency system in America and throughout the country, it still will not solve the problem. Because America's basic economic problem is the lack of purchasing power. You know, you got one-third of our families still below the official poverty level, whereas our industries have tremendous capacity to produce, our families have very limited income in which to buy what's produced. That's the problem we're faced with today. That's why you have inflation. And to keep it so simple, let's say you open up a business and you sold flat screen televisions and you went and ordered, you say the Christmas season is coming, you know, so you're going to place a big bulk order of television, flat screens, TVs. You stock your warehouse with more than, you know, you normally order because the season is coming, you think everybody's going to buy. Well, sales doesn't go the way you anticipated. In January 1st, you was anticipating to sell 98% of the inventory that you had. But come January 1st, you only sold 6%. Or 7% of the 100%. You with me? You only sold 7%, let's say 20% of the inventory, but you was expecting to sell 98% of the inventory. Now you got all these TVs still back in the warehouse. You pay. You got an invoice coming in 30 days. You got to get them paid for, or you pay for them up front, with the anticipation that they will sell. Now you got all these TVs back in the warehouse that can't be sold. What are you going to do? You got bills coming in, you know, expenses coming in the business. You mark up the TVs, the televisions that you got remaining back there in the warehouse. You mark them up so you can make the profit that you anticipated. That's what's happening today. That's why we have inflation. It's because ordinary people don't have the income to buy what is being produced. So then they go and pump out all this money into the system, hoping that you will continue. And it's based all around consumerism. They pump this money into the system, hoping that you will go and spend. And what they're trying to do, hoping you'll do that, they're thinking that it's going to balance out. But all they're doing is throwing water uphill. And that's why we have inflation. Somebody told me today that they bought a ham for Thanksgiving and paid $70 for a ham. Inflation is on the rise. That's because of purchasing power. So it's okay to change the money, the way money is the transaction of money through cryptocurrency and things like that. That's okay. That's a good way of making money transactions. But we have to address the real problem. The real problem is limited income in which to buy what's produced. And we have what we call the Economic Democracy Act. And under the Economic Democracy Act, it is a way to build more purchasing power into every American family and to do that in a traditional private property way. And that's what we have to, we as black people, we really have to just put on our seatbelts and sit down and look at what's going on in America today, what's going on with the American dollar, look at inflation, and if you look at the traits, you know, we're on the brink of being totally owned. We're headed back to servitude slavery, because with robotics and artificial intelligence, advanced technology that's coming into play, that's going to replace human labor. And, you know, lawyers and seven-figure incomes, doctors and white-collar workers, don't think you're going to escape this, because they're making robots that can do surgery. And those of you who have cash, you know, you call yourself got money and you're rich, you got cash in the bank, I suggest to you that you take that cash out and you go put that money into assets. The wealthy does not have a bunch of cash sitting in their wall and in their safes and in their closets. Their wealth is built and based around assets. It's not cash. You know, financial transactions take place, brothers and sisters, with no cash ever being at the table. But the wealthy people does not have cash. And those of you who have a bunch of cash in the bank, a bunch of cash here and there, leave it there. And I guarantee you it's going to be liquidated and evaporate, because it's going to turn into zero. We're headed for a major, major, major catastrophe. And we as black people are so damn sleep to the fact that we are going to get caught. We have been caught with our pants down already. But we've got an opportunity to do something about it. You know, we can't continue to just sit on our hands and say, hey, they're going to do what they want to do. That is such a poor way of thinking. Being you are a direct descendant of God and you're putting it into a man's hand, saying that this, they've got the power to do whatever they want to do. So, you know, I'll be talking, you know, a little bit later about, you know, what is the solution to the problem. And you have to ask yourself the question, do you want to own or be owned? You've got a fundamental human right to own some of the assets in America through capital formation. And I'll get into that a little early, but I also want to let you know that when you hear of shareholders and stockholders within a corporation, and major shareholders or the majority of the shareholders, let me tell you something, they don't get dividend payouts of the shares that they have within a corporation. It is kept aside to what you called, my mind just slipped, but it's, if they want to get, you know, their shares out, they really would have to sell their shares, which is giving up ownership, giving up power. They have to sell some of their shares to get out money, which is, like I said, giving up some of their power, giving up their shares, and giving up the most important thing is power to get dividend, get money out. It's going to come to me what it's called, where the money is the profits of a share and the shareholders' profits. It's kept. It's not like if a corporation makes, you know, 30% profit margin on their shares, then the one who owns the share does not get a payout at the end of the month, at the end of the year, of that profit. No, it is kept in a sort of like, let's just say, a vault. The name going to come to them, but it's just kept aside, and they own the shares. In order for them to give it out, you have to give up your power. I mean, many of you have heard, or, you know, I'm going to sell some stock, you know, to get this money out, and I'm going to sell some shares to get this money out. Well, you just pretty much gave up some of your power.
Brother Gene, are you talking about dividends? dividend disbursement?
No, it's going to come to me in a minute. Yeah, I was just explaining to the listening audience that, you know, shareholders within a corporate who own corporate stock do not get dividend payouts. The corporation does not pay out the dividends of the profits of the share. The shareholder actually have to sell some of their shares to get the profits from their stock. It's going to come to me in a minute, but that's just, I was just explaining how you have to give up your power to get dividend payouts of your shares. But we've got another way, a different way, not changing that, but there's a way that you can get dividend payouts from becoming an owner of a real productive capital and real producing capital.
It's interesting that you brought up assets when you did, because for the past several weeks, I've been hearing like a common theme. Somebody said, if you don't have assets, if the money that comes from your paycheck is all used to pay someone else, and you don't have assets, then you are someone else's asset.
Yeah,
if
exactly.
You don't understand, they continued with the saying. They said, if you don't understand how money and money principles work, then someone is using money principles to work against you. Your money is working against you, and somebody else is benefiting.
Yeah, we got to get out of the process mentality. You know, we go through the process. We follow the process. We have to get out of the process mentality, and we got to become creators. Look, ladies and gentlemen, this world is evolving. Everything is evolving around us. You know, it's natural. It's to happen. You know, I'm not going to go into the physics of it, but the sun is there for a purpose. It's doing its job. You know, scientists can't figure out what's going on with the sun, you know, but it's a lot going on. I don't want to go into depth with that, but there's a lot going. It's serving its purpose, because what it's doing is elevating the minds and depleting some of the richest, you know, ideas and concepts. At the same time, it's elevating the minds of people to a higher frequency, a higher level. But I say that to mean that we have got to become more innovative in our approaches on solving problems. We have to really, 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 you know, we have to play their game. It's not a game, but we have to meet them where they are. And DOS for ESJ is the only organization that is really meeting them where they are, telling them what the policy is, letting them know what the policy is, what they've got the right to do, and what we as citizens have a right to demand. But we have to come together and build the people power that's necessary to do so. I mean, if you love your grandchildren, you better start making some changes and focus on changes in policies and systems, because if you think it's bad now, you think inflation, a loaf of bread is $4 and $5, gas is about to hit $5 again, if you think it's bad now, it's going to get to a point where the have-nots is going after the haves, and they're not asking. They're going to be demanding and taking from those who have. It's going to be all right chaos.
I mean, but that's what they're already doing now. And the reason why I wanted to tie in the political aspect, because I don't think that people understand, Gene, about how important it is to pay attention and get involved in the political arena. And when I say get involved in the political arena, I'm not talking about parties. I'm talking about policy. And like I said before on this program, you give people your vote and you don't hold them accountable, and they are sitting up in Washington making decisions that are not in our best interest. And how long do we sit back and say, oh, well, this is happening and it's okay. And this is happening, but, oh, I can't make it. But this is happening and I'm having a hard time. But we don't get involved, not in parties, but in policy. There was a man named Thomas Sowell that said, it is hard to imagine a more stupid or more dangerous way of making decisions than by putting those decisions in the hands of people who pay no price for being wrong. They pay no price for being wrong, which means that if I somehow violate your opportunity to own property, homes, land, business, technology, infrastructure, if I block your opportunity based on race, religion, color, creed, kind, whether you cripple or handicap or whether you gay or straight, if I block your opportunity for ownership, I have taken away a human right, a God-given right. This is why ownership is so important. But I want to speak to the people, Gene and Vernon, that a group of ladies I met the other day, group of ladies, six ladies from the ages of mid-20s to maybe mid-50s. Lady told me, I just want to be able to pay my bills and have a little money left over. Everything is going up. My light bill going up, my rent going up, groceries going up, everything going up but my paycheck. So it's one thing for us to have a conversation about money that we have in the bank, about obtaining assets and creating assets and dividends and capital. That's one conversation for another group of people. But the majority of our people are like those six ladies that I met, that they have a bank account. But as soon as the deposit is made, the money is coming out. And we're not talking about shopping sprees and Nike and Dolce and Gabbana. We're talking about light bill, gas bill, water bill, rent, car note maybe, gas and groceries for them and their children. So they are so far away from the conversation of having assets and you know, learning how to obtain capital and learning how to move your money. They are so far away from that. We're talking about people who go to work every day and they're suffering. And if I'm saying that if we don't make a demand that this country invest in our needs, in our communities, we will never, ever get to the point of ownership. That is why we need to come together. That is why we need to attend on Institute. That is why when Gene say it's going to be the haves and the takers, because that's how we live in now. These people are taking lives just to get your assets, your life, not your dividends, not your bank account. They take in your life. And that's where we are now. It used to be the haves and the have-nots. Now it's the haves and the takers. So how do we speak to these people? How, what do we say to the mothers who saying that, yes, I get direct deposit in my paycheck, but then a week later, it's back to zero or it's negative because everything is going up but my paycheck? How can we, Dice for ESJ, benefit those people?
That's quite obvious, and the government has come to realize it, that, you know, we haven't had a pay increase since the 1970s. You know, the rate of inflation, you know, our paychecks doesn't keep up with the rate of inflation, and it hasn't since the 1970s. So how will we address those women that you met? And we have to just pretty much let them know that they're not alone. There's 90%+ more who are like that. But what the government is doing now to try to combat that dilemma is they're coming up with universal basic income, which is that not all sustainable. And then they're doing pilots now, universal basic income. They want to do that because they've realized that American people needs a second income. And they come out with the universal basic income, and how that works is that they will tax the rich on capital gains, add a tax to the rich, you know, on their capital gains, and then take that. The rich pretty much pay a certain percentage of extra tax, and then they take that and distribute it to, you know, the American people. Well, that's a form of redistribution. And the problem they're going to run into is, as I said earlier, that the wealthy does not keep cash. So in order to tax that, they will have to pretty much sell some of their assets in order for them to determine on what to pay. But it's quite obvious that Americans need a second income. And DOSVSJ, we have a second income. It's called the Economic Democracy Act, and also known as the Capital Homestead Act. That legislation was introduced to the Missouri Senate back in 2021. It didn't make it out. It was a resolution asking that Congress pass the Economic Democracy Act. And the Economic Democracy Act is, let's say, what I mentioned earlier, capital formation. That's the formation of capital that they spend every year for growth of the corporations, machines, and stuff like that. And we estimated it to be about, $3 to $4 trillion. You take that amount, divided by the population, it comes out to about $12,000 a year. Under the Economic Democracy Act, each and every individual will get a $12,000 allotment to buy all we ask the Federal Reserve and the central banking system is to monetize the transaction. But first, they will have to look at it and see, is there feasibility there? Well, of course there's feasibility there, because this money is backed up by real assets, to where now you're printing money ain't backed up by nothing but thin air, you know. So there's feasibility there. Let's say a child born today will get $12,000 annually to buy some of the new advanced technology, robotics, and artificial intelligence that's replacing human labor. By the time that child gets age 16 or 17 years old, they have $18,000 a year in dividend income coming in a year, and their capital estate is still growing when they turn 65. At age 18 years old, $18,000 a year coming in capital income, I can pay for my own damn education. I don't have to go into student loan debt. If I want to go to school, get an education, I can pay for it. By the time that person get age 65, they have an $88,000 capital dividend income coming in. $88,000 a year coming in, you don't need no Social Security. You know, no need for food stamps and all that. Now, I know those numbers probably sound, you know, a little bit far-fetched, but, hey, that's how the wealthy is getting wealthy. Just by those numbers that I mentioned to you, that's how they're becoming wealthy. And we've got an opportunity to tap in that. But the reason there's such a monopoly going on and wealth is so concentrated because we're like just pawns out there. You know, we haven't figured out. They know that we haven't figured out what's going on. And we haven't figured out that we've got an opportunity to tap into that market and get some of those assets and that capital assets. They understand that. But another thing, Queen mentioned infrastructure. You know, I asked some college professionals, you know, I asked them, what does, you know, and I'll get to academia in a minute, but I asked some college professors, I mean, professionals who went to college, got all these degrees. When I say infrastructure, what does that mean? What do you think? What comes to mind? They said road and bridges, you know, and stuff like that. But infrastructure, when you mention infrastructure, infrastructure does not just include roads and bridges. And infrastructure is everything that's sustainable to run a community. You're talking about roads, bridges, water systems, electric utility companies, you name it. But why is it that it's the utility companies? You can't buy shares in local utility companies, you know, but we've got a way that we can tap into that. So we have to end the monopolies, you know. And I don't want to hear nobody say, well, you know, that's their game, that's theirs, you know, they ain't going to let us. Stop telling yourself what you can't do and start telling yourself what you can do. You know, we have to change the system. You know, like I said earlier, it's a fundamental human right that you've got a right to own property in association with others. We got that God-given right to own some of the capital that's flowing around in America.
All right. I want to give the listening audience an opportunity to ask questions. It's okay to ask questions if you don't know. Press one on your dial pad, and Brother Gene or I'll be more than willing to answer your question. So, Gene, that was a very good breakdown as to how, as to how this would benefit those people who are just living from paycheck to paycheck. But
yeah, we need a second income.
But it's not going to benefit any of us if we don't get involved, if we don't come together. You know, that's the main thing, because we have to stand up in a unified fashion and claim what is ours. We have been deprived of every economic boom there was. We were deprived of the dot-com boom because nobody told us how we could get in. We were deprived of the green boom one time when real estate, especially in the South, was selling so cheap. People were buying acres and acres and acres and acres of land, and we missed out on that boom. You know, how long are we going to be at the bottom of the totem pole? We have to do something different. The first thing we have to do, Gene, is to get people to understand. We're offering you a free education through the OWN Institute. That's going to start up next year. You're going to be able to register for the classes. You're going to be able to, you know, take the classes, ask questions, And you're going to get a certificate at the end of it. It's not college, but it's just to say that I have a better understanding about money. I know what money is. I understand about capital. I understand about property. Now I understand better what I need to do with my people in order for us to get this done, not just in St. Louis, Missouri, but all over the country, because it is us, African-American, Native Americans, that are dying. And I don't want to get off subject, but I have to say this, because I've said it before, and I don't think I put enough emphasis on it. But I don't know if everybody knows, and because it doesn't get much media play. But last night I was watching the news. I think it was, I can't tell you what the station is. It was on Channel 34 in Bryan, Texas. But anyway, they're doing this special on Native American women. And last year, 438 women and girls came up missing, and 237 of them have been found. Their bodies have been found. This is a warning to all women, especially women of color. They are taking us doing, and let me mention that they had no organs when they were found. Let's not leave that out. A lot of them. Some of them have been sexually assaulted or whatever, but a lot of them who were skeletalized did not have organs. And there were evidence of surgical marks on them where something surgical had taken place. I'm saying all that to say this, that our Native American brothers and sisters suffer a little bit more than we do, a whole lot more, actually, than what we, the African-American community, does. That is a people with no protection. The FBI, the CIA, the DEA, nobody is looking for these murderers out here. They are killing young women, y'all. Why? Why are they killing young women on the reservation? Because the reservation is owned by the citizens. But America has bankrupted their infrastructure. They don't have anything. You would be amazed to walk up on a reservation and see no stores, no schools, no homes with electricity or running water. You would think you were walking back 200 years in time. Think about it, and then think about Utica, Mississippi, where they living on the plantation. Their means of money is what the owners, because they don't call them masters anymore, is what the owners will allow them to sell of the fruits and vegetables that they harvest. And that's how they get money for clothing, for shoes, for toothpaste, for deodorant, for toilet paper. This is how they get their charges. This is real in Utica, Mississippi in 2022.
And to keep in mind that the...
Go ahead.
And to keep, just to iterate on something, you know, the up on the Indian reservations and the Indian land, they don't actually own the land. They're leasing the land. The U.S. government is the trust over all their land. I mean, how barbaric is that? You come here, you stole their land, then you lease it back to them. and have them to have, they have a sense of ownership. And we've got to get to the Native American people and to share with them the Citizen Land Development Cooperative, and that's a way that they can build infrastructure. You're right. They have no sewers, no sewer system, no infrastructure, no roads, no bridges, but they're looking to government for these things, and they're not going to get it from government. You see, in America, black man and woman, you got two governments. You got a constituted government, and you got a shadow government. And that shadow government is the Federal Reserve, the central banking system. That's the shadow government. And those are the ones that we're not, and I want to say this, we're not, the OSFSJ, we're not challenging the Federal Reserve. We're not, you know, attacking them in no kind of way. All we're saying is do what you have the powers to do, is to create money for private sector growth. And based on future earnings and future savings, that it is to be paid back. What the Federal Reserve is doing now is that they're lending money to governments, and it's based on future taxpayers, your grandchildren. But the Native American people, if any of you are listening, you have to be educated on the law that we just got passed in Missouri, the Citizen Land Development Cooperative, where you can actually begin to truly own your reservation. That's why when you're traveling on the road, you pull over to these scenic areas and you see the Native American people out there selling, you know, little things that they've handmade. They're not doing that for fun. That's their way of survival. But here's a people whose land was stolen and taken away from them. Then, under Abe Lincoln, under the Homestead Act, Abe Lincoln gave millions and millions of acres of stolen land to those to go west of the
Mississippi. All of it's stolen, Gene. All of it's stolen. Yeah. Let me tell you something, Caucasian people. I'm sorry to inform you. Your inheritance was stolen. All of it. There's not a blade of grass that Caucasian people in this country rightfully own. And the reason why I keep pointing to the Native American people, Brother Gene, is because post-slavery, some of us seeked refuge on the reservation. Some of us grew families with the Native Americans. So we can't say that we're separate from them or that we have no involvement in their welfare, because some of us have a lineage that comes off those reservations.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I was pointing how can you take land and stolen land from a people, and the native people are the most impoverished people in America today. Even with our forefathers who, you know, our fathers, you know, invented the typewriter, the egg beater, the lawn sprinkler, the toilet, everything came from the black man. We invented these things. We came up with, you know, created all of this, but yet in 2022, we don't own nothing. We don't own nothing. I mean, we don't own anything. I mean, that's a problem. And the reason that we don't own anything is that we're afraid. I don't know whether we're afraid to stand up or we have to make demands. I mean, the whole world is waiting on the black man and woman to get up. And this is not, you know, I'm just, it is what it is. You know, I'm not going to say be apologetic for nothing. The whole world is waiting for the black man and woman to stand up. They don't want to do trade and commerce with the American government. They want to do it with you because they know more about your history than you do. So it's time for us to really buckle down and start looking at the issues, because our grandchildren, with this robotics and and I want you to pay attention to the Dots for ESJ Facebook page, because I'm going to be posting some information on there that backs up what we say, how robotics is replacing human labor. Articles that says human need not apply. Article from the Federal Reserve President of Atlanta, who's a black man, Mr. Bostic, in Atlanta, how the Federal Reserve is presidents are openly awaiting for somebody to come in and sit at their round table with them and say, look, this is what we want, this is what we're deserving, and we got a case. They just sent over $40 billion to $50 billion to Ukraine to help Ukraine.
Aiding.
But did they ask you? You got to pay the money back. Your grandchildren got to pay every dime back through taxation. Did they ask the American people, is it okay? Those are your tax dollars that the Federal Reserve printed out of thin air, sent it to Ukraine and other parts of the country. They do this every day. But we sit back and just go along with the program. We accept everything as being the norm. The crime in our neighborhood. I was coming through Chesterfield last night. And those who live in St. Louis know Chesterfield. I came from the beginning of Chesterfield all the way to the end. And coming down Highway 64, Highway 40 in Chesterfield, I seen lights, production, I seen buildings, clean roads, the zipper stripes in the building was just perfect. I mean, I seen productivity going on. But the minute I hit my neighborhood that crossed that line, I seen six cars on the interstate in my neighborhood. See, black folks, we need to make communities. Niggas make hoods. We need to make communities. But when I got to my community, it was like I was in a whole different city. Why is that? Because we sit back and let this happen. We say nothing. We accept it as the norm. It is not the norm.
But I think that's the great thing about Dots for ESJ, because I don't want to point the finger of blame at anyone, because they didn't teach us the science of business. That's one thing. The second thing is that what I've learned through psychology is that, let's talk about this for a second. What I learned about Roosevelt and his New Deal was that post-slavery, they thought after the stock market crashed that the way to control the African-American community was to provide subsidies to women and children, because the men were doing things unorthodox for the purpose of feeding their families. You think about it. 1865 in Texas, but 1863 everywhere else. you coming out of slavery with nothing. Some people were able to build whole cities and establish government in places like Rosewood, Florida, like Tulsa. But then you had other people, especially on the East Coast, coming down to the South that didn't have those opportunities. So they went, the men, a lot of them went back to slavery. If they didn't hang them or kill them, they went back to slavery through incarceration because they stole a chicken off of Mr. Johnson's farm because their children were living in tents or in shack houses or wherever they could to so-called stay free. Some of them even froze to death. But what I'm getting back to is this. Roosevelt's New Deal was not charity. It was not because he was so concerned with the African-American community and poor communities. Let's just put it like that. Let's not put a color on it. Poor people. It was to contain the idea that you could excel past what I am giving you. I'm putting you in a condition better than what you had. I'm giving you cheap or free housing. I'm giving you access to food stamps and TANF where you can go out and buy food and buy toiletries and you know, get the minimal part of what you need. And it was so much better, y'all. So much better than what they had. And so the mindset was, this is as good as it could ever be. I can go to the store. I can feed my babies. I can pay my rent, or my rent is free. And this is good as it gets. All them niggas out there protesting against, you know, Jim Crow and calling for civil rights, what more could they want? This is the psychology behind what we call the ghetto. So that was an education that was given to our people, Gene, that want to keep them in that boundary.
And that's, you know, I sometimes think you can't really blame the politicians because we got to go to the root of the problem. See, we that's what we do at DOS VSJ. We go to the root cause of the problem. And you can't blame the politicians because it's just what they've been taught. Academia, educational system is so antiquated and so outdated. It has no relevance, no relevance at all to you becoming a productive human being. Now, what Queen was talking about with the New Deal, Roosevelt, I said again, they addressed the effect of poverty and didn't look at the cause. And then they pretty much address everybody according to his or her needs. They addressed the needs, but they didn't go to what he or she can produce. And then during the New Deal, not only that, they didn't, that second factor of production, and I want you to go on the website and go to what is called binary economics. Binary, you don't even hear that in the institutions of learning. Binary economics is, I know it sounds new to you, but go on our website. Binary economics is just like synergy. There are two factors in production to produce a product. There's your human labor and the capital input. The capital input is putting in 90%. You're only putting in 10%. So under the New Deal, And the politicians today, they're still acting on that conventional thinking that full employment, we want to produce jobs. We want to produce jobs. If it's going to create jobs, it's good. But they're missing that other factor of input of production, which is capital. And then under the New Deal, they did not factor in that other factor of production is capital. See, if they have, we have to educate those in Washington because they totally off the beat. They're thinking, they're only doing what they've been taught, you know, in academia, educational system. They only know what they've been taught. So they have to be retaught and re-educated. And then maybe if they're re-educated, they can see how to solve the problems that's plaguing our communities and the problems of America today. They just basically operating on the wrong system. And that's why the wealth is so concentrated and there's a monopoly. We have to, look, they gave us equal access through the vote, through the ballot box for political democracy. But yet it's a plutocracy. But they gave you access to the vote, but they didn't give you equal access to gain economic democracy. And that's what Dr. King was headed back to Washington for. On his third march to Washington, he had come to realize that, look, we got the voters' rights bill, we got the public accommodation bill, but I forgot about something. He was headed back to Washington for an economic plan. And if Dr. King was here today, he will be 1,000% behind. He didn't have a plan in place, but he knew that we needed an economic agenda, but he didn't have an agenda or platform in place. And that's why I say if Dr. Martin Luther, and I think his celebrating his birth or something is coming up in January or the holiday, but if he had seen the Economic Democracy Act, he would be behind it 1,000%. And we would have been able to give him this platform that he can go to Washington with. But, you know, he was assassinated 3 weeks prior to them going back to Washington. You know, he said, this time we go to Washington, we're coming to get our check. You know, that just means that you got to do something about the economic system. And Martin Luther King gave a speech to his congregation saying that, you know, we need something above socialism and communism or capitalism, I'm sorry. You know, we need something above that. So what Dr. Martin Luther King was looking for is a new paradigm. But academia and educational system, they're not teaching. And Queen mentioned about own institute, you know, own institute of learning economic and social systems. It'll be a virtual course. Hopefully it gets launched in January, no later than February, where you can go on and learn online and learn about these things. There will be some in-house training also. You can do it in-house or virtual, but OWN Institute, ownership, wealth, and knowledge, and drop, you know, lowercase k, and knowledge. We have to become educated. We have to re-educate ourselves on what's going on with the system, how the system is working. But money is just a social tool. You know, we got to stop chasing money, you know. And Vernon can attest for this. We got to get in a situation where our money is working for us while we're asleep. You know, we got an opportunity to do that, and it's not based on past savings. It doesn't have to be based on how much money you can invest or how much money you have in the bank or past savings. It doesn't. The Federal Reserve is to create money based on future earnings and future savings. So the Federal Reserve, I'm sure they're having meetings behind closed doors. Probably every week saying, how in the hell are we going to fix this? You know, so they don't have the answers on how to fix it. They're creating money for the wealth to become wealthier. You got to create some money for the poor to become richer.
All right.
Mr. Queen,
well,
there's a book I wanted to share a resource that this conversation reminded me of. There's a book called The Richest Man in Babylon. And I think the subtitle is The Cures for a Lean Purse. So once again, the book is called The Richest Man in Babylon. And the premise or the main point, plot of it is these are the cures for a lean purse. If we realize we don't make enough money, we don't have enough money, but we need money to do what it is we need to do to create a future for ourselves, he tells it, the author tells it in a story form about this man who was in ancient Babylon who, you know, was born into a wealthy family, but his father said, you got to prove yourself before you get my riches. So he sent him out, and he was story of the prodigal son. He fell as low can get. He ended up being a slave. He ended up, you know, sitting with the pigs and eating what they eat. He just went to the lowest of the low. But he had to learn the lessons the hard way. And out of all I just said, that's my point. Learn the lessons the hard way. That, unfortunately, is what we in this time are going to have to do. We got to face some tough music. But as Minister Farrakhan said, business is warfare. And in case you haven't noticed, we are at war. But we must first be raised in consciousness so that we can play our part. So that question that you asked about what do you say to, you know, the mother, you know, who has the children or the person who's living from paycheck to paycheck, and as soon as they get it, you know, it's gone. The first rule, the first cure, it was 10 cures for a lean purse. The first cure is a change in mindset. And it goes, it's quoted like this. It's quoted like this. 1/10 of everything that you make is yours to keep. So before you pay the bills, before you pay this, that, or the other,
pay yourself.
It should be pay yourself first. You must, because if you don't have anything to work with, you know the saying about the haves and the have-nots, and from the one who had only a little bit, what they have is going to be taken from them and given to the rich. You better fight back. Stop making excuses. I'm sorry if I'm in that mood tonight. If your toes is out, I'm trying my best to step on them. We don't have no excuse.
Come
we
on.
We don't have no excuse. I'm watching people.
Yeah.
I'm seeing people. I'm seeing this sister was a truck driver. She was a single mom, had been abused. She was scared to death to leave her children alone, but she had to do what she had to do. She was a truck driver driving a gas truck for 15 hours, 6 days a week, because that was the best she could come up with to make ends meet. She couldn't see her, I think she has two children. They were teens at the time. She couldn't spend quality time with them. She had to always make some arrangements with her mother or another close relative to make sure that, you know, they were with somebody that she could trust, because she didn't trust hardly nobody after what had happened to her. But she made a way. She found a way to, as Brother Gene said, make better decisions, educate herself, learn how to put her money to work for her instead of her working for her money. That's what she had to do. That's what her responsibility and obligation to herself and her household was. That is what every one of us has to do. And then collectively, after we can stand up on our own 2 feet, we got to come together collectively as DOS for ESJ and say, let us go and push this agenda, because this will make it all right for all of us.
Yeah, and if you think about it, Brother Vernon, if you think about it, Brother Vernon and Sister Queen, I mean, just think. I mean, you said something, Vernon. You made the point where we have to change our mind, you know. And I'm going to go, Jesus said the kingdom of God is within you. He didn't say it was up there. He said it's within you. You have got the power. You have got the power to change things if you would just change your damn mind. We have to get out of this way of what we've been taught, because the way we've been taught is to keep your mind conditioned on being owned, being a slave to a system. But you also said something else about, you know, how the sister had to make, you know, decisions and she was afraid. It's time for us to go to get against the grain. I mean, we don't have all the time in the world. You know, if you go and read the book, The Fate of the Empires, it was talking about how empires failed and Babylon and the ruins of Rome and how all of it fell. It usually falls without the 250 years. America's a 243 years old, you know, so you got a little time left. But, you know, we have got to come together. And my point was, if 2022, when have we had a collective body since the Poor People's Campaign and Dr. Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement? When have we had any demand on governments and those who are in power, not asking for a handout, but asking for social justice and economic justice, what is due? We're not asking for a handout. We're not asking for to cut a check for reparation. Repair the system. That's the first thing you do, is to repair the system. We have to democratize the money system. It is an economic problem. When we talk about economic justice, just erase the word economics and bring it home. Money, money, money. That is the problem. That is all of America's problem. The way the money system is operated, how the money system is, the wealth of America is distributed. You know, we got to talk about these things. But what's good about Dasri is, Jay, you know, it's just a little old man with no education, didn't know PhD, no BS, because that's exactly what it is. But we have to go to them and meet them where they are. You know, you talked about, you know, the Federal Reserve. After George Floyd incident, I mean, they were all on it. Racial inequality, closing the racial wealth gap. Even Citigroup put out an article saying that, you know, if they end the racial inequality, that it will add $16 trillion to American economy over a 10-year period. See, we got to start looking at the cost of things. The dollars that were invested in creating redlining and things like that, there was a cost to that, and government paid a big cost for that. Well, that's a big cost to the economy, and we're richer. Black people are richer than, what, 9 other countries combined? We spent $1.6 trillion a year in consumerism. Consumer. You know, and then we try to escape this reality knowing that our jobs are not enough to make ends meet, so we go out and want to become an entrepreneur, but yet we have not taken the time out to understand the science of business, but we want to be an entrepreneur. And black folks make a big damn mistake by, you want to go in business, we go and create a, we don't create a product or buy, we buy a product and then go see if there's a market for it. See, we didn't understand the science of business. You go and see, test the market and see if there's a market for your product. Then you see, come back and see if it's feasible to go in that type of business. You know, that's why most business, black businesses, I support black businesses. Yes, it's good for black business, but I get so goddamn tired of hearing that. Black businesses, when black business is based around consumer goods and services, when are we going to get in manufacturing? When are we going to get in producing of goods and services? We can, it's only so much fish and chicken we can eat. There's only so many heads that a barber can cut because he's one man. Only so many. So we got to look at, there's ways that we can start growing our businesses, and we got to understand the benefits of cooperative businesses. Cooperative, that's where more than two or more individuals coming together, pulling their resources together, and everybody is an owner. We got to look at how ways that we probably can form our company as an ESOP company, where everybody owns an equal share in this company. It'll grow faster, and everybody will, you know, do their best to make the company grow because they have an equal share of ownership within the company. These are things we have to look at when it comes to black businesses. You know, these pop-up shops. I'm not being critical, but sometimes constructive criticism is good. But, you know, these pop-up shops, man, that ain't nothing. When you're talking about the trillions of dollars out there that the wealthy have, I mean, look at Amazon. Look at what they're doing, you know. I mean, just a thought came out of a mind of a man, and look what was created. So we have to start going within ourselves and extracting the gifts and the talents and the creativity that is buried under the graves of your ignorance. We have to begin to extract that because it's within all of us. See, but the enemy, what he's done, he's put everything out here in front of you to distract you, and next thing you know, you haven't realized the gifts that God has put within because you distracted now, and that the enemy has conspired. He said, come, let us cut them off from being a nation. And we've fallen right into the trap. So we've got a chance, you know, to come up out of this. I mean, your forefathers built this country, built this economic powerhouse to what it is today. And yet we're at the bottom of the list of the social and economic ladder. That doesn't make sense at all. Is anybody still there?
Hello?
Yes,
ma'am.
We have a question. Hello? We have a question for 4987. Your mic is live.
Okay. How are you all? Hi, Mr. Jane, and hi, Ms. Queen.
Hi.
Hey, dear, how are you?
You speaking with? Oh, that's Jolanda. Okay. Hey, Jolanda.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Good to hear your voice, and thank you for joining us this evening.
Yes, I would just like to make an observation. I agree with every point that's been made so far. Hope everybody's day and evening is going well. There's an observation, and this comes from our discussion today, and it also is something that I gleaned from other conversations around the world concerning our community. Our communities, and that is the disadvantaged communities, the communities all over the country who have in some way or another been robbed, and that's all the way across the board, all people of color. Well, that's one thing that I noticed that should be considered, and that is that we should probably stop feeling that there's only one answer to the dilemmas that exist right now today in this country. There is a whole lot of power in understanding that we have there are several answers, and that we don't have to always choose one or the other, like the argument between W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington. I always that argument always bothered me because there should not have been an argument. Both men were right. We need everything, and I think a lot of times we feel like we only deserve one or the other. That's a small way of thinking. You have to bring a diverse group of people to the table. You can't just bring, if you want to figure out the answer to a problem, you don't bring all scientists, all engineers. You bring a farmer, you bring a dairy farmer, you can bring a garbage man, you can bring a painter. See, you have to have different perspectives at the table. The power is in how many minds do you have looking at the same problem. And you have to have different points of view before you can actually get down to what the answer is, because one of those people understands it from a perspective that is going to give us a cure or an answer. And so I think that there's a danger in us thinking that we have to choose one answer or the other. That's not true. There are many answers to the situations that we face today. And we don't have to choose one. What we need to understand is whatever works. And one answer works for this particular problem, another answer for that problem, you know. And so what I find is that we limit ourselves when we think that there's only one way to do this. No, that's not true. There's always a machine, and a machine has different parts. So we have to identify that for this particular part, we need educators. For this particular part, we need engineers. For this particular part, you know, we need people who are gifted in counseling and therapy. And you know what I'm saying? And so on and so forth. We need a whole team of people to do the work that we have to do. We need an army. And we need an army of specialists. And specialists, I'm not talking about education per se, but we have a lot of gifted men and women in our community who are ready.
Yeah.
They just don't have an agenda.
Yeah, they're standing out on the street, and I agree. What Tia just described is building the infrastructure. And that's what we were always taught, pulling resources together. And that's just the meaning. That's the meaning of synergy, two or more systems working together to produce a common goal or a common objective or a common one product. So we have to pull our resources together, and that's the way of building really a sustainable community. Because, like you say, you got to have engineers, you got to have electricians, you got to have, you know, arts and culture, you got to have aquaculture, you got to have, you know, trade and commerce. Pulling all those resources together is the way of building sustainable communities. I mean, you know, within our community, there is no continuity. You know, everybody has, each generation has to keep starting from scratch and starting over. But that's just an example of pulling all our resources together. Like, you know, DASA ESJ, you know, we pretty much, our main focus is change of the monetary system. But there's other 9 advisory councils that needs to be put together and brought together, and that's how you have a sustainable, safe, and thriving community. All of those aspects have to be at the round table put together and to produce a solid product, which is thriving communities. That's what we have to do. That's just a matter of pulling all of our resources together. And like you said, there's a lot of talented people out there. They just haven't really, really found where they can, you know, utilize their gifts and talents and their skills to, you know, produce something good for the benefit of a whole people. And that's what we need. It's a lot of work. I mean, it's the toughest job that I can ever think of is, you know, trying to raise the people who have been pretty much mentally dead. You know, that's a tough job.
It's hard to build a nation because, just like Tia said, you have all of these, you know, intricate parts that need to be brought together. It's almost like Frankenstein, you know, like you're trying to create a body. You know, you got to find the arms, you got to find the legs, you got to find the heart, the liver, you got to find all of these parts to come together for the common good of all people. And that is what DOS is attempting to do every day of the week, is to reach people and not with a specification. We want you to come as you are, as they say. And you don't have to have a bunch of letters behind your name. All you got to have is a determination for change, a determination to make life better presently for yourself and for your children in the future and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren. Because how many of us who are living paycheck to paycheck want our children and our grandchildren to suffer the same fate that we're currently living in? And in order to make that happen, you have to do nation building. And that's why we have to have health and human services. That's why we got to have communications and media, agriculture. You know, you have spirituality and morality. You have all of these things to feed the human need. And the human need is beyond money because you got to be whole as a person. Everybody wants, you know, to live better financially, but some people are broken inside. So like she said, you do need those counselors. That's why you have health and human services to address those needs. Look at the food that they're feeding us today. We need to be able to grow our own food. Our children are eating out of McDonald's, Popeyes, and Wendy's, and whatever else, and they are being poisoned. And it's time to introduce healthy, wholesome foods for them to be able to thrive in the future. You don't even know what you're putting into your body. And so that's why education is key as to why all those 9 areas of advisory council is needed. And these are action committees. These are not just, 9 areas and we're going to sit down and talk about it. These are action committees. We want to see something come into fruition out of those 9 advisory councils because that's nation building. We want to have services for people who need counseling. We want to have services for people who need health care. We want agriculture. We want to control our media. I am passionate about African-American media because we don't have any control over what is being portrayed in the front of our children. But we've allowed TV and BET and MTV to babysit our children, corrupt their minds. And that's why they're pulling on you and tugging on you for the next new tennis shoe and the next new Michael Kors bag and the next new weave that's coming out. They're pulling and tugging on you. And then after a while, they say, well, you know what? Mama can't get it, but I can. I'm going to go jack the old lady around the corner, put a gun to her head, and she give me too much resistance, put a bullet in her head, because I'm not going to be a have-not. I'm going to become a taker. My nephew was killed for $17 and a cell phone. And you know what they did with the $17? They went to McDonald's and spent his $17 right after shooting him in the side in such a way that the bullet came out the top of his head. This is real. You know how old they were? 17. If we don't start providing what we need in our communities, can't you see the direction babies are going in? It's us that dropped the ball. It's us that didn't pick up the baton after Dr. King was assassinated out of the race. The fear factor crept in. They killed Martin, so I'm not going to put my life on the line. If you ain't willing to die for nothing, then you're living for nothing. Because there's got to be something in this world that you're willing to die for. And if you're not willing to die for your children and your children's children, then what is your purpose? You didn't come here to be a slave. That was not God's intention. So I'm telling you that everyone is invited. The doors is open. They're open, every idea, for every color, creed, and kind, for all of the unwrapped gifts. You don't need a degree. There is no educational criteria to join on to build a better system for our people. And we need to reach out to the Native American community. Those people are suffering. You are a parent. Can you imagine your baby going missing and getting that knock on the door and say, oh, well, about 500 yards away from here, we found her bones? That is horrifying. And guess who else is being taken? Our beautiful young African-American women are being stolen. They call it sex trafficking. But sometimes it's not about the sex. Sometimes they want a kidney. Sometimes they want a liver. Sometimes they want a heart. And they go get it. So what about protection in our communities? We have a lot of work to do and a short time to do it. Open your eyes and see what's going on in front of you. All right. We got about 5 more minutes. Any other questions or comments, please press 1 on your dial pad. Last word of solution. Brother Vernon, come on, talk to me. Give us some marching orders. Brother Vernon? Hello? Can y'all hear me?
I hear you.
Yeah, we hear you. Maybe he went on mute.
All right, well, Gene, give us some marching.
I would just want to say, you know, in the 9 advisory councils, that's a way of building a sustainable community. As Teal was saying, that we have to pull all resources, you know, together, you know, to come up with a solid, you know, platform and a solid product. But at the front of that must be economic justice. In the preamble of the Constitution, the first thing they said is to establish justice. We have to get social and economic justice, and that has to be number one. We have to address the social institutions in becoming institutions of change, and we have to address the economic and monetary policies and system. That's number one. Most America's problem is based around economics. So we have to, you know, have that at the forefront. Nobody is addressing, and nobody has since Dr. King attempted to, is to address the economic issue. We have to address the economic issue, and economic justice has to be at the forefront of whatever we do, because we've had programs, we've had, you know, systems, you know, in place and programs, but nobody's ever addressed the economic side of it. And I think it's time for us to address the economic and the monetary system in democratizing the money system. You have to put everybody in the nature of God, you know, rendering everything equal, giving us equal access to some of the wealth that's being created in this country, and not be based on past savings. No, it shouldn't be based on past savings. So we have to address the economic justice issue. That is number one. We have to address that, because if that's not changed and the democratization of the money system, then everything else is for naught. We have to address the money system, definitely.
All right. Brother Vernon, are you back with us?
Okay, I don't know what's going on. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, I was on my Bluetooth earpieces, and I was hearing y'all fine, but I guess it wasn't picking up the microphone. But the only thing I have to add is it's time for personal responsibility. I am in 100% full alignment with Brother Gene, Sister Queen, and all of DOS for ESJ. But if you want to individually get your weight up and prepare yourself for the fight that's ahead, if you're looking for how to get yourself in position to be able to make a difference, I'll leave you with this quote from good old Reverend Ike. He said, "The best thing you can do for poor people is not be one of them." So join me. Hit me up. Let's see if we can work on some things together. Goldmasterplan.info is my website.
All right. Okay. I like that quote from Reverend Ike. Tia, you got something you want to leave us with?
Oh, no. Just everybody, you know, live above the influence.
Come on now. I like that. All right. So I guess my marching order to people is just, your greatest resource is yourself and your family and your community. Pool your resources. Get your village, get your cluster group, come together and let's make a difference in how we're living. Let's make a difference in how our neighbors are living. Let's get involved in an organization that is striving desperately to make change to the economic system and to our social system. So join us at DAS4ESJ.org. Go to the website, get that information, get an education. Go to our Facebook page. It's Descendants of American Slaves for Economic and Social Justice. You're going to get some videos in there. We're going to put a lot of information in there. And join us sometime early next year, and we're going to start a registration for you to sign up for where you can get an education in everything that we're doing. We need committee heads, action people who are going to bring those nine areas of advisory councils into fruition and get these things done. So thank you for joining us this evening. I appreciate the time that you took out of your day to join us. Thank you, people in the chat room. I don't know how many people listen online, but thank you for joining us, and certainly those of you who called in. Have a blessed week. May God bless you and keep you safe from danger and harm. Stay prayed up. One nation, one love. Good night, y'all.
Yeah. When I was a young boy.